case number 09-5365, Randy Hardin et al. Appellants versus Lisa Perez Jackson, Administrator, United States Environmental Protection Agency et al. Ms. Kickham for appellants, Mr. Oakley for Appellee Jackson, Mr. Slaughter for Appellee BASF.
May it please the court. We have an important case before the panel today. It has important public policy implications and certainly important health and public safety implications. In enacting FIFRA, Congress was drawing a balance between pesticides we need and the danger they potentially pose. And in doing so, Congress allocated to the EPA the obligation of gatekeeper, that before a registration for pesticide issues, the EPA must make certain factual determinations that, taking into consideration all the good and potential harm that a particular pesticide, a new pesticide, can pose, that overall the pesticide does not pose an unreasonable risk of harm to humans or the environment. And that's critical. And it's mandated. It's mandatory language. It's the mandatory obligation of EPA. And in this case, EPA simply didn't meet that obligation. There was no gatekeeping at all in 1992 when a registration issued to BASF for a brand new, never before used chemical called quinchloric, which was incorporated in Facet 50. This brand new, highly toxic chemical was released in 1992 pursuant to that registration, has been used ever since without the EPA ever determining that it was, considering all things, not an unreasonable risk to humans and the environment.
You were aware as of 1995 or so that it registered?
There was a case in 1995 where a defendant in a lawsuit that involved negligent application of aerial spray brought in BASF as a third party. But the plaintiffs below did not bring in BASF and had no cause of action directly against them. With the plaintiffs,
the point is obviously the statute of limitations here, and when the registration was discovered is one aspect of the argument, and it seems that at least as of 1995, maybe 1996, it was known that this had been registered, and so that would have put you on notice that to look into why, how it had been registered, and if there were a problem with it, to challenge the registration.
And that takes us to the nature of the statute of limitations in this case, which is a 6-year statute of limitations that runs from accrual. And this court has said there can't really be any serious doubt that the discovery rule applies in this case to this statute of limitations. This court has said so in Connor versus Hallmark and Sons in 1991, and again in Nizer versus White in 2002, that the general federal rule is discovery of the injury, not the injury occurrence, but discovery of the injury. And specifically in the 24, in the APA context, that discovery of the injury is what triggers the statute of limitations.
Why isn't this well outside the 6-year period then? Because the suit's filed in 2004, I guess.
Because of the nature of the injury, Your Honor. When the crops are damaged, a farmer in Arkansas knows that there is an injury. There is property damage that shouldn't be there. And a diligent property owner is on notice that they should search out the cause. He's on notice of the injury, whether or not he knows what caused it. And so a diligent litigant in that situation is obligated, and the statute of limitations rightly runs at that point in time. But what we have here is a different injury and two different actors. That's a property, a suit for damages with potential product liability, potential negligent application of a neighbor who has a different type of crop where the pesticide's appropriate. But there are two injuries that are going on that share pesticide in common, but it wasn't until suit was progressing for property damage that the litigants in that case were able to discover what is a separate injury, the injury of the EPA not following its mandate, not making these critical factual determinations for human safety.
Suppose the registration had been published in the Federal Register in 1995. Would that have started the statute of limitations running then?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't. And it wouldn't because presumably all pesticides that are used and have a label are registered. But that doesn't put anyone on notice, not even the injured farmer.
If published, doesn't that put everyone on notice?
It's notice of that the pesticide is registered, and the presumption is that a registered pesticide under 136AF2, that the presumption is it has met all the requirements of FIFRA. That's the presumption, and I think plaintiffs are entitled to rely on that presumption. It turns out in this case, the EPA had not made the determinations that were appropriate for issuing the registration. In this case, the registration did not meet all the requirements of FIFRA. It is, in effect, a hidden injury, this separate injury with a separate actor. And the cause of action against the EPA is not a damage action. It's the remedy is equitable. It's we're seeking a declaration that the registrations are void because they were issued in violation of the statute, in violation of Congress's mandate that these critical determinations of safety be made. And so you have really two very different types of injuries and two very different types of actors. And in the case of the EPA, unlike the property damage that a farmer can see and feel monetarily, in the case of the EPA, it is a concealed type of injury, in part because of the lack of publication, but also just because the substantive findings were never made. And this court addressed the discovery rule in the context of a hidden injury in Connors versus Hallmark. In that case, there was an issue of employers making contributions to pensions in the correct amount, and under a bargaining agreement, the employers were supposed to monthly make a certain contribution. And it turns out the employers were not doing that. Under the bargaining agreement, the trustees for the union had the right to go in and audit whether those correct amounts were being made. And in fact, the trustees at one point did audit, and they found about a $5,000 difference. Several years later, they go in to audit again, and the number is much larger. And at that point in time, they sued to recover, and statute of limitations was thrown up, the discovery rule, with the employers arguing, look, you should have known this. Not only should you have known it back in years ago when we underpaid by $5,000, but you had the right to audit. You could have come in and looked at our books anytime. And this court said no. You had employers, you had the obligation to do it right. You had the obligation to get the amount right. You had all the information within your control. And even though the trustees for the union had the right to come in and audit, they had to have a reason. They had to have a reasonable basis for doing so under the agreement. And in this case, where the injury is concealed and not obvious, the right to audit does not trigger, and not even the prior injury, not even the prior, triggers the statute of limitations. In a hidden, concealed injury, the discovery rule is just what it is. When you knew or should have known of the injury, and the injury of the EPA not following Congress's mandate is very different from errant application.
But if you're right that the registration number doesn't, the fact that there is a registration number doesn't put you on notice, and even actual publication in the Federal Register wouldn't put you on notice, Don't we have a situation where there would never be a statute of limitations for procedural injury in this kind of case, right?
This is more than a procedural injury, though. It is that. It is a failure to publish. And the point is that when a diligent litigant discovers that the EPA hasn't done its job, hasn't made this finding, absolutely, that diligent litigant should file and take appropriate action for review. But just as in the Connors case, where this court placed responsibility on the employer to meet its obligation to make the appropriate contribution, that same principle applies to the EPA. The EPA Congress has said, you, EPA, you have this duty. And don't forget that in tandem with the EPA, you have manufacturers who are very interested in bringing their pesticides to market. They have an interest and ought to have an interest in making sure the registrations are done appropriately. Just as in Connors, the burden for doing it right begins with the EPA, and for that matter, through the process of getting a registration issued, EPA works with, they are in the best place to make sure that the registrations issue appropriately with the correct findings and publication.
We have lots of cases where it's alleged that agencies haven't done what Congress directed them to do. And those cases directly against the regulation are not allowed years after the fact. If you don't bring it within the required time frame, then you have to wait for an enforcement action against you instead of directly challenging the regulation. I realize that's not really an option for you here, but that's how we usually do it. So we don't suspend and say, just because it's an agency case, you can challenge it whenever you figure out that they might not have properly filed notice and comment, or it might have been arbitrary and capricious, or what have you.
And the answer is, I think this goes beyond those cases. And the answer is that in applying the discovery rule, and we are not asking the court to stretch its application of the discovery rule. We're asking the court to apply the discovery rule when a litigant knew or should have known. Registration alone, publication alone, would not have put anyone on notice that the EPA hadn't done its job. And think about the converse of that. If we are to presume that the EPA has never done its job in a case that involves pesticides, that can't be the right answer. It can't be the right answer that a litigant should presume that the EPA failed in its critical determination of what is safe and what is not for humans and the environment.
What's the status, maybe I should ask the other side, but what's the status of the petition?
And that is a good question. As far as I know, it's still pending.
Okay, well, I'll ask the other side.
Mr. Oakley?
Yes. May it please the court, my name is Robert Oakley. I'm here on behalf of EPA. I'm splitting my time with counsel with BASF. I'm taking the first 9 minutes. I think to get to one point right away, there's been an evolving change here in Hardin's position, new arguments popping up here. But if we were to take the extreme position that was being advocated by counsel today for the first time, that publication in the Federal Register doesn't do it, then it's hard to see how 2401 is going to bar much of any actions against the federal government. We get sued. I spend a lot of my time in various courts of appeals defending agency actions under the National Environmental Protection, Policy Act, on the Endangered Species Act, where the agency announces a decision in the Federal Register. And in those cases, the litigants, the environmental groups, are very quick to take a look, see, well, what is the government saying that backs its contention that there's going to be no impacts to the environment or no impacts to an endangered species? And they sue us. They don't wait around to have the species die out. They don't wait around for the project to get built. They sue us. They are diligent. These parties were not. They say as early as 1995 they had concerns about quinclorac. They knew the product was being registered by EPA. It cannot be sold without an EPA-approved label that would have specified the conditions under which the product must be used. All they have to do is be aware of their injury And if they thought that quinclorac is dangerous, they can't sit around until they finally get to it, which I guess was sometime in 2000, look at the record for the registration and say, gosh, we think EPA didn't do its gatekeeping features. Now, I want to make clear that EPA is not conceding that, but the district court judge didn't reach that point, that this court doesn't have a record on the merits. So that's just pure supposition and rhetoric by counsel. What the judge did was say, this suit is out of time. I believe it's jurisdictional. They've never said that it's not. They haven't said that it is today, or disputed its lack of jurisdictional impact, and so I'm kicking it out. In terms of...
Before you get too critical of people sitting around without doing anything, what's going on with the 7-year pending petition?
That the answer to that question, and by the way, I'm glad they conceded today that it's pending, because they make an argument, which I found ludicrous at the end of the brief, that the district court somehow dismissed that petition. So I do want to highlight that they admit today that the petition is pending, and they are correct on that.
Okay,
what's been going on?
What's the status of the 7-year pending petition?
Yes, and here's the status. This, as we point out in our brief, the active ingredient in this substance is called quinclorac. EPA, as it must do by statute, is conducting a review of quinclorac. And that review started in late 2000. Eventually what happened is the petition, their claim, which they have a very substantive claim, that is that this stuff is so dangerous, EPA has no business letting it out into the environment.
Which is why getting a decision before 7 years would be important. But
it would be, but it's a complicated decision because all this stuff has got to be bad. I mean, the point of a pesticide is to kill something, right? So EPA takes a very serious look at this. They're conducting cancer studies and all sorts of studies that actually go beyond the issues that they're raised. This is in the quinclorac work plan, which is in the joint appendix. I think it's at page 129 of the joint appendix. And I'll be honest with the court, it's years in the future before they'll complete these cancer studies and they'll know. But at the end of that process, they'll know, is this thing so dangerous that we need to pull it off the market, or are the risks, if used properly, acceptable?
So it's years in the future from now.
Yes, it is. But when I say that's not just their petition that's going to decide a whole host of issues going to whether quinclorac should be used in pesticides or not. As to the discovery rule, I know I'm cutting into counsel's time, but I would just refer this court to its own decisions as we do in the brief.
Have you ever told them that before?
I'm sorry?
Have you ever told them that before, that it's going to be years in the future from now?
Yes, because we produced the quinclorac work plan. It was an exhibit in the summary judgment proceedings in the district court, and the schedule is in there. The work is part. It's a work plan, and it says we're going to do this now. They, by the way, have never commented on quinclorac. BASF has, and another group has, but as far as we know, they have no connection with the plaintiffs, so they're not participating in the quinclorac review at all for whatever their concerns about the substance are. The last thing, I'll just, again, refer this court. We cite numerous cases where this court has repeatedly held, even when there are allegations of notice failure by an agency, that the 6-year statute of limitations runs from final agency action, and that final agency action really would have been the first registration because the others depended on it in 92. They didn't sue until 94. And we'd ask the court to affirm.
Can I ask you one question?
Yes.
About 136NA and what it takes to make a refusal of the administrator to cancel or suspend a registration judicially reviewable?
136, yes.
10 years from now, let's say your studies take another 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and 10 years from now you say we are not revoking or canceling the registration. Is that then judicially reviewable?
It is. I believe it would be judicially reviewable when the process is completed. However, the only hedge I'm going to make, and it's a complicated question, is whether the case would be properly filed in the first instance with this court or with the district court, because that B provision says, as I understand it, the way this court has interpreted subsection B, if there's an administrative record, and surely there'll be an administrative record, it would come to this court.
Because you've had hearings, or you're going to.
We have studies. There would have to be a reasoned basis for the administrator to decide, well, we're going to keep this, or no, we're not going to keep this. So whether they're suing us or BASF is suing us, I think it would most likely be in this court. But my hedge, Your Honor, is those those A and B are very complicated, I think, provisions for a lawyer to construe. So, but either A or B, I think, would apply. C would not apply. I think it definitely would be reviewable by this court, or either as a, through an appeal or in the first instance.
Thank you. Mr. Slaughter?
Morning, Your Honors. James Slaughter for Appley BASF Corporation. Judge Henderson, your points about FIFRA Section 136NA and its analog under FIFRA 16A are very much a part of this case in terms of an alternative basis for dismissal of the complaint below, and I will address that and my arguments as well. But I'd like to start out and amplifying on a point that Mr. Oakley made. While the district court below did not reach the merits of the claims being made by the appellants here, I think it's important to illustrate for the court that the record does reflect, in terms of how actual notice was given to the appellants, that this is a safe pesticide. BASF submitted over 170 studies during the initial registration process regarding quinclorac products before it got that first registration in 1992. It is one of the most important pesticides for rice farmers in the United States and has been used extensively on hundreds of thousands of acres every planting season since the early 90s. And throughout this process, nowhere have the appellants put into the record a single scientific study contradicting or calling into question the safety of quinclorac products such as FACET and the determinations that EPA did make that it met the criteria under FIFRA for registration. Those criteria and the satisfaction of them by EPA are reflected in this record, again, in terms of showing that the appellants had actual notice that the work had been done by EPA. Those include the fact sheet that EPA published shortly after the issuance of the notice of registration in 1992, a half a dozen Federal Register notices on other aspects of the FACET and quinclorac registration process, such as the setting of tolerances for residue amounts of quinclorac in food products. So the record is replete that on the merits, the appellants have a very weak case, which perhaps suggests why EPA...
I appreciate your point, but it's really neither here nor there for purposes of what we have before us, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. What you have before you is a simple question of whether the district court...
Because they would dispute what you're saying, and we have no basis on which to choose sides on that issue.
I think it sounds like EPA is disputing it. I mean, if it's such an open and shut case that this is a harmless pesticide, why is it going to take 10 more years to determine that? What's your position in all this? Is BASF saying, we did all these studies before it was registered back in the early 90s. We can cut all this short. Nothing's changed since then. I mean, it is significant in that respect for the agency, some people might say, refusing under A to cancel the registration.
Your Honor, you're correct. We would certainly appreciate a prompt decision on the petition. However, EPA is entitled to use the registration review procedure that Judge Kavanaugh was asking about earlier. Registration review is done for every pesticide registration. It's mandated by Congress and FIFRA that after a number of years, a pesticide should be reevaluated to see that it still meets the criteria. And two district court decisions in this court have spoken to how this registration review process dovetails with the petition process. And the Beyond Pesticides v. Whitman case and in the NRDC v. Johnson case, in both instances, the district courts ruled that EPA could delay ruling on the petition to cancel while the registration review process was ongoing. That registration review remains open to the appellants. It's a public process. They have not submitted any data whatsoever to get their views regarding the alleged problems with quinclorac before EPA in that forum.
In that forum. They've done it in the petition, correct?
Yes, and then they tried to...
Oh, I mean, it's before EPA, so it's, I don't really get the significance of that.
The registration review process, which will incorporate science from all stakeholders in EPA, will give EPA the complete grounding to make a decision on the petition, to the extent that the petition makes allegations regarding the safety of this product. But as you noted at the beginning, it is a very basic statute of limitations question. Their complaint wants to cancel the registrations. All the registrations were issued over 6 years beyond when they filed this lawsuit. That's open and shut under 2401 and the six-year federal statute of limitations. There is an alternative basis for dismissal here that is important to remind the court about that BASF has fully briefed. As Judge Henderson pointed out, under 136NA, to have jurisdiction in a district court or the Court of Appeals, there first has to be a decision by the administrator on that petition to cancel. That basic jurisdictional prerequisite has not occurred, just as the other jurisdictional prerequisite of a suit within 6 years has not occurred. So we would simply ask that if the court decides to affirm the district court on the statute of limitations ruling, that it make clear that that ruling does not suggest or imply that there may be a cause of action to directly challenge in federal district court a pesticide registration. You have to meet the requirements under FIFRA of having a decision on that petition, seasoned and studied EPA review of those issues before you can go into district court challenging that decision not to cancel a pesticide registration. See, my time has expired. If the panel has no further questions, thank you.
Does Ms. Kickham have any time?
Your Honor, counsel spoke about the re-registration process and the reviewing of whether the pesticide met its original criteria. We still don't have a finding by the EPA that it ever met its original criteria. This product, as BASF points out in its brief, has been used in over 30 countries and throughout the United States for almost 20 years now without that original finding. And 7 years since the petition was filed by these plaintiffs with the EPA, there still is no answer. These parties, BASF, EPA, told the district court every quarter for 2.5 years, there's a decision coming on the petition plaintiffs have filed. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. It's coming on December 31st, 2007. These were representations to the district court. And then it just didn't happen. And so in 2008, on January 15th, the district court below took back up the case and put it on its active docket. We can't wait forever. And the cases cited in our brief say you don't have to wait forever for review, and that substantive...
Well, those are separate kinds of APA actions to compel agency action unreasonably withheld, right? That's not what this case is.
No, that is not what this case is. This is a case of the EPA violating its statute, and the harm is ongoing. It continues to be used. And all those other pesticides that now incorporate quinchloric, let's not forget that under a Register 3 Section 3 registration, one of the bases is that there's already something on the market with this active ingredient. That is a basis for becoming registered under Section 3. So the fact that in the very first instance of the use of this active ingredient in the environment, the EPA simply did not make those determinations is all that much more critical and hidden, concealed. The discovery rule allows plaintiffs to bring suit when they did, when they actually knew that the EPA just didn't meet their obligation. And it allows for court review now.
Thank you.